clocks in the system rather than human beings. They were, you know, Pharaoh was using them to build his empire. They were people without freedom, without agency, and without, really without much hope for the future. Then Moses shows up, having been convinced in an encounter with God, that burning bush, having been convinced that God would use him to free his people. God uses Moses in rather miraculous ways to break down Pharaoh's hardened heart. He also uses Moses' staff. Use your imagination. This is a staff. Among other things, when Moses strikes the Nile River with his staff, it turns to blood. Through Moses and his staff, God sends 12 plagues, which eventually break down Moses' resolve, and he lets the people of Israel go. Following God, Moses and the people of Israel go into the wilderness, and that's where we meet them today, in the wilderness of sin, it says in our passage, but that's not sin with a small s that we usually think of. The word can be translated as thorn, the wilderness of thorn, and it is obviously a thorny and uncomfortable place. Now, we're going to join the people of Israel in the wilderness, in this dry and thirsty place. And I need 12 people to help me out. First one is Moses. Who would like to be Moses? This is not huge. You're going to read it off a piece of paper. It's not big, guys. It's a very small thing. You don't have to be an actor or an actress. Any Moseses out there? Come on, somebody. John, go for it. I give you the staff. Okay, just stand here. And here's your paper. Then I need God, or the Lord. You thought Moses was big. This is the Lord. Somebody need to be the Lord. Come on, somebody be brave. Here comes Claire. There. Here we go. Okay, wow. you stand up there. And then I need 12 people. 12 people. Get up and come forward. The first three, you will also have elder on your thing, and at a certain point, you will follow Moses, the elders, and the rest of you don't have to do the elders. Okay. Two more. One behind me, Tyler, and Bruce. Okay, Moses and the people. Hike back there. Everybody except the Lord. Go back to the... Now, if you want to follow along, they don't have mics. I mean, you've heard the story already. If you want to be really, really sure of what they're saying, you can look it up in the Bible. It's Exodus 17, 1-7. From the wilderness of sin, the whole congregation of Israelites journeyed by stages as the Lord commanded. Come on, people of Israel, come on, come on, journey by stages through the wilderness of sin and thorns. Maybe stop right about there. They camped at Rephidim, but there was no water for the people to drink. The people quarreled with Moses, said,
"Give us water to drink."
Moses said to them,
"Why do you quarrel with me? Why do you test the Lord?"
But the people thirsted for water, and the people complained against Moses and said,
"Why did you bring us out of Egypt to kill us and our children and livestock with thirst?"
So Moses cried out to the Lord. Moses, yeah. The Lord said to Moses,
"Go on ahead of the people and take some of the elders of Israel with you.
Elders, elders, come forward.
Take in your hand the staff with which you struck the Nile and go. I will be standing there in front of you on the rock at Horeb. Strike the rock and water will come out of it
and the rock is up there. Elders go with. And you just strike it. Water is pouring out. Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. He called the place Massa and Meribah because the Israelites quarreled and tested the Lord, saying,
"Is the Lord among us or not?"
Thank you very much. You may go by seated. So this is an old, old story, which, you know, it's set in place and time that is not familiar to us. But did anything about this story of thirst and frustration, speak to you? Was there anything that brought it to mind? We're going to have a time of conversation. Just warning, you're supposed to talk here. Yeah. Anything that struck you about this story or thoughts about thirst in the wilderness?
I think any time that we can't see how our needs are going to be met, we question whether God is really there and listening. And it can be water like it was for them, or it can be a job, or it can be a place to live, or, you know, any number of things. But if it's not there for us to see, is God really there, and is God really going to provide?
You know, John.
I see it more like, you know, with my children. It's like God is the Father. We have Moses and his children. It's like, you know, God's going to provide for us, just like, you know, we provide for our children. And so, I just feel the kids are like the quarreling.
Losing patience.
Just chill out. We're going to get there and do whatever. So
that's a good analogy.
Yeah, what stuck out to me was Moses saying, "Why do you quarrel with me?" And I was thinking, you know, he's got a really good point. You know, he didn't make it a desert. He didn't cause it to be a dry area. He's just trying to get these people to where they're going, and, you know, saying like, "Well, what, you know, if you're thirsty, why are you mad at me? It's not, I didn't make it a desert." You know, that was my thought.
The idea of desert, of wilderness, it has like two sides to it. One side is the, you know, the dry and thirsty and place without sustenance and fear. And the other side is the place of God's surprising care. Those two things often happen in these wilderness stories, is the place of dryness and emptiness and hunger, thirst, but also the sight of God's surprising provisions for us. Any other thoughts about wilderness or thirst? And I guess I don't have to use this mic. I have one. I'll get confused.
Well, I just had to wonder, you know, with that outcome, did the people have to complain or take it to God to get the water, or were they just going to walk by a rock and a rock was going to open up on its own and water flow out? Somehow was their role of taking their need to God an important part of that story?
Interesting. Did they need to do that? Did they need to speak out somehow? Was God expecting that from them? Doesn't seem like it in that passage, but is that part of it?
I think like the image of thirst, like hunger, we kind of think of it as the inconvenience of being thirsty. Like, I'm a little thirsty now, and I know I'll get a drink when I go out there. But the thirst that they're experiencing is a desperate thirst, where they don't know where the next water comes from. And so getting water is also that much more satisfying and fulfilling.
Right. I mean, that whole idea of, you know, that there's water afterwards. We can all get a drink. But if we didn't know there was any water, or when there was any water anywhere, wouldn't that intensify your feelings of just feeling, oh, I don't know what's going to happen?
It's okay to complain to God.
It's okay to complain to God. That's quite true. When we try to, censor ourselves, censor our feelings before God, then we're entering not into a truthful relationship at all. This is also about tests and temptations, you know, and that also fits the Lenten theme. We started off with Jesus in the wilderness, getting tested. Here we are again with tests and temptations. It's a bit like the testing of God in this story as well. And in tests and temptations, you know, for this one is lack of water, so you're thirsty. And then that turns into a craving. I've got to have it. Got to have it. And cravings often turn into uncertainty and greed, and we become self-centered. We think only of what we need. That leads to a nostalgia for the past when things were better, things used to be like this. And then we need to find somebody to blame, a scapegoat or a culprit, like they did with Moses. Rejection of faith in God's provision. So I don't know. I mean, Debbie says, well, did they need to start crying out? Or were they just to trust? What do you think? What are your experiences with having to wait on God for something that you don't know is coming or not? God's provision. We listen to the woodpecker.
That line in there, the why did you bring us out of Egypt to kill us and our children and livestock with thirst? I think that's a temptation sometimes, or maybe that's the wrong word, but just the reality where you are looking back on this miraculous work that happened. I've had those seasons in my life where God was obviously working and providing, and I find a way to turn that and use that as a kind of a weapon or kind of a sparring instrument in my doubting to say, you know, was that even you, or what was the purpose of that if now this is where it's led me, sort of thing. So that just caught my eye. Not to say that we're not supposed to grumble or not supposed to complain, but the fact that grumbling is used by God as a tool doesn't necessarily mean that that's the best thing, or that I don't know. I just don't always. I'm rambling now. I don't know what I'm saying, but
thank you, Tyler.
I don't know if someone had to complain or not. We don't know if there were people that were not complaining, and perhaps it seems like there's always a few that maybe are trying to encourage those who are complaining to, you know, that it'll be okay. So, but to get the full picture of the human experience, we do have people grumbling or complaining, and that's maybe just to present that.
Mm-hmm. Kind of a real life story.
So often we want to go to God with our best clothes on, you know, mm-hmm. and our best smile and our best of everything, and yet there's a lot of lament in the Bible. A lot of sadness, a lot of sorrow. And that's very human, and it's very human for us to cover it up. But maybe it's much better to complain and say how we feel, because God knows how we feel anyway. And he can see what we're doing and how we're coping with things. And so it's all right to cry out, I think.
That's a very good point. I mean, what you said too, Duncan, is, well, I've often said that I've grown to feel that the Old Testament is like a real mirror to humanness, to what human beings are like. So much of it is full of foibles and mistakes, and then God kind of working in and among that. And maybe that's what that story is about too, is that sense of just being miserably unsure, thirsty beyond thing, and this something that's a very human experience. And you enter into that human experience, and God is there, even though it's presented as something that's not ideal, but it's not ideal. I mean, that situation is just plain not ideal. But how were people in that? How can we be in that? And God is in that too. Any other thoughts?
My verse that is very meaningful to me is, they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They will run and not be weary. They will walk and not faint. Teach me, Lord, to wait, that I need to do.
It's a beautiful, beautiful psalm. That's from, and it is that whole, there's that part, I mean, like kind of what you were saying, Tyler, I think, is that you have to wait, but you're not really quiet or happy in the waiting. It bugs you. You don't know what it is. But the waiting is neat. You have to do it. You can't get by without it. Teach me, Lord, to wait. When I was studying this passage, I came across a little story in the Believer's Church commentary about provision. You know, we have these stories in the Bible which are miraculous beyond what we can imagine, you know, like hitting the rock and water comes out. You know, how on the earth are we supposed to think about that happening? And this story is a story of God's provision that sometimes seems miraculous, even in our modern, more modern, this didn't take place a while ago. It was a story from a Mennonite woman in Germany who had experienced the hardships of the Stalin era in the Soviet Union. She tells this story. She says, "We exiles were literally dropped off in the wilderness of Kazakhstan. Famine seemed inevitable. But to our surprise, the water holes were full of a certain kind of fish, and we survived on them. The nomadic natives told us that these fish, though native to the area, had become extremely rare in recent years. God had done a miracle for us." And then there is the kind of thing that we can help, not miracles to happen, but a response to thirst and need. In your box today, you'll find an article about water project assisting families in Iraq. Thirst and need for clean water is so important for so many people in this time. We were last night, Bruce and I were at a fundraising thing with Tyler and Holly for freshwater projects for water in places like Malawi and Nicaragua. And I need water, good grief. Oh. There are ways which we too can help in providing water. I mean, not just this, but I found that this week and thought, this is just really important. You work with our water all the time, don't you, Art? Doing water projects around the world. I got one in my pocket, thank you. Oh. I'd like you to turn now to the back of your joys and concerns. We will read this together. Actually, Barry or Lynn, why don't one of you read the leader part since I'm coughing all over the place?
Oh God, you are the living water. You restore us to life. We confess that in the desert moments of our lives, we forget your faithfulness. Our bodies grow tired, our hearts dry up. Our minds become clouded, and we do not remember that you are our deliverer.
When we see the dryness behind us before us, we pour our hearts and burden one another. We cry out, is the Lord even among us?
Forgive us, O Lord, for in the harshness of life's desert journey, we quickly focus on ourselves. We forget that you have been, you are, and you will forever be our deliverer. God, our living water,
restore us.
Let all who thirst come and drink from the living water. Let all who have nothing come to the Lord. Come without money or price. Come and draw freely from the well of our Lord, which will never run dry.
I invite you now to participate in a ritual of refreshment, of receiving water, of quenching your thirst. I'm going to ask Frank and Bethany to come up and serve the water. And then while we do this, I'd like us to sing our Lenten theme song. You are all we have. You give us what we need. Our lives are in your hands, O Lord. Our lives are in your hands. And Brenda will lead that. Bethany and Frank. So come and receive the living water that is Jesus Christ.
You are all we have.
a bit of a water flowing from the rock experience here. O God, you are my God. I seek you. My soul thirsts for you. My flesh faints for you, as in a dry and weary land where there is no water. So I have looked upon you in the sanctuary, beholding your power and glory. Because your steadfast love is better than life, my lips will praise you. So I will bless you as long as I live. I will lift up my hands and call on your name. My soul is satisfied as with a rich feast, and my mouth praises you with joyful lips when I think of you on my bed and meditate on you in the watches of the night. For you have been my help, and in the shadow of your wings I sing for joy. My soul clings to you. Your right hand upholds me. Brothers and sisters, this is the word of the Lord, and it can be trusted. Amen.
Now is the time for our offering.